Now, every night on the news, we are met with very serious and controversial headlines from the White House, North Korea, even from our own capital city of Canberra. Also, every night, we're plagued with countless numbers of satirical comedy shows. It can be said, particularly in today's political climate, that we are living in a golden age of satire. It's a phrase that I have heard thrown around a few times now, but have you ever wondered whether these shows are doing more damage than good? Well, Katrina Spadaro is a PhD candidate at the University of Sydney, researching early modern humanism and satire. She joins us on the line now. Katrina, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me, Tess.
So it seems that we sit back and we have a laugh at the world every now and again, particularly all the shows that do sort of flood us come the early evening. Why is it that we need satire in amongst the world's problems?
Well, it's certainly true that satire and the world's problems go hand in hand, I think. That's because satire is a really reactive form. It doesn't occur in a vacuum, but it's fueled by grievances. So when we see an increase in socio-political turbulence of any kind, that leads to an increase in satirical work. What I find quite interesting about this correlation is increasingly it's led us to view satire as almost a sense of comfort and solace. So when we're confronted with unstable times, we almost go to it as a source of real-world comic relief. And increasingly, that's why we hear people talk about needing satire and this phrase, you know, sitting back and laughing at the world. But this is actually a major departure from how satire has historically been viewed. And in the past, satire was kind of viewed as a vehicle for very uncomfortable truths. It was meant to be jarring and quite confronting. And it was meant to be less of an ideological refuge, as we're kind of viewing it today, and more of a means of disrupting echo chambers and triggering dialogue and change. So if we do need satire, it's true it can be therapeutic and it can be really cathartic during troubled times, but whether or not that should be its primary purpose, I think, is another question. And
And I think we've all had to sit through, a cringeworthy comedy sketch before. It's something that everybody knows about. Why is it that some political comedy would, at best fall flat and at worst potentially have a harmful effect?
Yeah, well, we see a whole heap of reasons that political comedy falls flat. Sometimes it's just too extreme or too graphic. Sometimes, dare I say it, it's just not very funny. So I think the most interesting cases of humour falling flat are when audiences just don't get the joke, when the humour of it fails to translate for whatever reason. And humour theorists have long been making the case that for the transmission of humour to take place, audiences have to have similar backgrounds, beliefs and assumptions to the speaker. And these groups in humour theorist circles are known as discursive communities. So, I mean, we could take a pretty tame example, I guess, and look at something like Russell Quite's Solo the Adventures. not the most biting political satire, but kind of an interesting case study. So to understand the humour of a show like that, you have to be familiar with the tropes of the travel documentary genre and also this kind of archetypal figure of the Aussie bushman that's caricatured by the show. To get its irony, you really have to have had enough exposure to these tropes to also have a healthy scepticism towards them. So I'd make the case that if all Aussie Adventures was taken beyond Australian shores or outside of the discursive community that is Australia, the chances are viewers wouldn't find it as funny as we do. And that's because the meaning conveyed through irony is often the exact opposite as the meaning conveyed through a literal reading of the text. That's a pretty tame example, but I think historically we see examples of this kind of satiric miscommunication having really scary effects. And the most chilling example I've stumbled across is of Jewish comedy routines in Weimar, Germany, where we see these increasing anti-Semitic views, kind of the lead up to Nazism. And Jewish performers were often taking to stages to perform really ironic routines that mocked stereotypes of Jewish people. But increasingly, non-Jewish people were coming along to these performances because they found it really entertaining to see their anti-Semitic views embodied on stage. So the irony wasn't translating between these discursive groups in that example, and the performances were actually having the opposite effect of what was intended. So in an example like that, we can see the risk that satire can sometimes actually deepen divisions rather than breaking down barriers to dialogue.
That is a terrifying example, actually. So I suppose, you know, if you have an audience, there's no real guarantee that everyone's going to be able to take away whether or not you're mocking something or just confirming it for them.
That's absolutely right. And whether or not you're a member of the discursive community in question is really the big determinant in that. And these discursive groups, they're formed around really obvious things like language, sometimes generational divides, but also worldviews and values really play into it. So it can be scary.
And just before I do let you go, Katrina, I know it's a big question, but is there any real key to, I guess, creating successful and thought-provoking satire without, I guess, ebbing into confirming any terrible stereotypes?
I think, well, I mean, again, it just depends on the measure you use for the success of satire. But if we are going to take this really old-fashioned idea of provoking dialogue and provoking change, I think the most effective works of satire tend to be introspective. So they tend to look inward inside the discursive group in question and encourage them to think critically about the values and the worldviews that are uniting that group. And in contrast, I think the least effective forms of satire are probably those that encourage us to laugh at people or groups outside of our own groups. And that can just really deepen ideological divisions. You don't want to be overly prescriptive with this, but I think a helpful guide that, you know, a question we can be asking ourselves is the person or group who's the object of my laughter in this sketch or in this article the same person or group I need to win over to my way of thinking before substantial change can take place? And if the answer is yes, then the sketch might make us feel really great, but it's probably not effective satire.
Katrina, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much, Tess.
That was Katrina Spadaro from the University of Sydney giving us some food for thought on how we should go about digesting political comedy and satire.